Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Baseball Podcast.
Good evening, and welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Football Podcast, number 21. I am your host, David Feld, and tonight we are once again joined by Fantasy Team Advice staff writer Ray Mazzarella. And tonight we're going to jump right in with my top 15 things we've learned this season. I'll read the list, and Ray will respond after each one in the point-counterpoint style of conversation. Are you there, Ray?
Yes, sir. How's it going?
Good, thanks. It's the weather's warmed up. We had some snow meltage. I know you're in Jersey with me, so it's today was a nice sunny, nice day. And
yeah,
I'm glad to hear you.
Finally, good to not be feeling like an icicle, which is nice.
Oh my God, I'm telling you.
Speaking of feeling warm and fuzzy, I was kind of digging that baseball jam that we got played in for us. I was digging it a little bit. A little bit different from football music, you know.
One of these days, it's all going to be right. I'm telling you. Today was the first time a caller was in the queue ready to rock and roll. Anyway, let's get going. The season's over. The Super Bowl's done. There's absolutely nothing going on in football. So we are, and I mean like no news for like pages and pages of Google, Yahoo News. There's nothing going on in football. It's all about the combine. So we get to talk about whatever it is we want to talk about. So if you know, let's just jump right in and figure out what we learned from the 2014 season. I'll read off a point and make a point, then you counterpoint it, and so forth and so on. So let's get started. What we learned from the 2014 season, ? The first one is that you can cheat and get away with it. Now, the Patriots are most probably going to get fined to some degree, and somebody's going to get suspended, whether it's a player, a coach, they throw an equipment guy under the bus or something. But they're going to get fined and suspended, yet those guys got to play in the Super Bowl and win it. So you can cheat and get away with it. What do you think?
Well, asking the guy who's a professional wrestler on the side is kind of unfair, because I'm going to quote by Jesse Ventura, "Win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat." And especially in this NFL where the Patriots have been caught cheating in the past, and the repercussions were not severe enough to keep them from doing it again. And until they are, I think you're just going to keep on seeing things like this happen, unfortunately, under this kind of a circus-like NFL these days with all the unfortunate negative publicity.
So your answer is yes, you can cheat and get away with it.
Pretty much.
And until they make these fines so prohibitive that you just won't do it, that the penalty is just too harsh, then I guess we're just going to keep putting up with this stuff. Number two, the bad officiating is here to stay. With what happened, I'm not certain how unbelievably bad the Dallas situation or the Dez Bryant catch, non-catch, fumble down by contact or whatever that should have been at the 1 yard line there against the Packers in the divisional round. But I'm thinking that's part of it. Not necessarily that the officials themselves are bad, but the speed of the game and the conditions under what they're put, I think that contributes a lot to a lot of bad calls. And even when we go to replay, they still seem to get it wrong more than I'm comfortable with. What do you say there?
I'm definitely in agreement there, the bad officiating. And I think a big part of the reason also is because nobody seems to know, or at least nobody can seem to agree on what half of the rules are in the NFL anymore. And if the referees are going to call it differently than Mike Pereira would call it, or then people in charge would call it, then you're going to get more situations like this happening. So until everybody can agree on the rules and how to call them, bad officiating ain't going anywhere anytime soon, I don't think.
So that's something else we learned this year. Number three, that a division can be won with a sub-500 record, as we saw what the Panthers did. I guess the closest any team had come prior to that was the Seattle Seahawks from several years ago. They had won the West with an 8-8 record. And I think somebody might have won the NFC East not that long ago with an 8-8 record. But I think this might be a first where a sub-500 team can win a division. So I think we learned that as well. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, the competitiveness of a lot of these divisions over the years, you know, how the NFC East used to be the division to beat, I'm surprised that it hasn't happened more often because you get a lot of these teams beating each other up. And I mean, this year at the NFC South, like, it seemed like theirs was more of a case of nobody really wanting to win the division at times and a lot of teams going into certain dry spells. And then just Carolina was the team that, you know, pulled ahead at the right time. But, and again, they proved this year, like, it's really, they're kind of like the poster child for, you know, a team. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And this is, the NHL is a point system. I would be very curious to see how the NFL would work with a point system. Just kind of like an off-the-top-of-the-head idea.
Oh, my God, if we had to put up with that regulation tie, I think my head just might explode. I can't, I've stopped watching hockey since shootout started, basically. You know, the state of regular hockey, like, you know, the 60 minutes and the 5-minute overtime, I think, you know, that's in really good shape. But, the you know, if you can't win it in 65 minutes or there, you know, it's a tie. You know, I mean, it's just and then they go to free throws. It's, you know, oh, I could win a free throw contest or whatever it is. And what are they going to do, kick field goals? If they do that in football, I think that just might be the end of the sport. I'm not too sure. I mean, we got so much wrong right now. But number four is that we still don't know what a reception is. And I'm going to let you talk first, and then I'll chime in second. So why don't you respond to that? Is that something we learned this year, that we still don't know what a reception is?
I think so. And again, it all comes back to these rules and how nobody seems to want to know how to call this Calvin Johnson rule as it's being called. You know, any time, like the whole ball on the ground, you know, keeping possession throughout the whole entirety of the catch. I mean, it's just such a they have to come into an agreement on how to call this rule. It's starting to get, it is, not that it's starting to get ridiculous, I think it's been for a little while, but it's true that nobody knows what half the rules are anymore. So we still don't know.
I tell you, you know, go back, I don't know how, you're a young guy, but I'm not, but I would go back to take a look at a replay. You could probably pick it up on YouTube or maybe the NFL Network. If you go back to the Bert Emanuel catch, I think he was playing for Tampa Bay, and I believe it was the championship game against the St. Louis Rams in 99 or 2000 or something like that. You know, I don't even think the ball needed to touch the ground there, but he had that thing with both hands. He was kind of falling forward. And he clearly had it, and he used the nose of the ball to kind of balance himself, you know, as he was tilting forward there. The nose of the ball touched the ground. Mike Martz might have been coaching the Rams at the time. It might have been after the 2000 season. It might have been after Dick Vermeil retired. I'm not sure, but I think it was a playoff game. And anyway, that ball touches the ground. And, you know, I'm thinking that's a catch. And, you know, he had it, and he landed. He got his 2 feet down, was taking a third step, leaned forward, nose of the ball touched the ground. St. Louis challenged, and the thing was overturned. And I that was a huge, huge play in that game. That was long before the Calvin Johnson nonsense happened, and long before that crazy play against the Jets when Ray Lucas was quarterback in the Jets, and he threw that pass to Chris Chambers in the back of the end zone that I thought was a touchdown. And after they, you know, even though Herman Edwards challenged and the Jets got the call, and I was enjoying that because, you know, they ended up beating the Dolphins that game. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that's probably portends bad things for the future, because now we don't know what a touchdown, you know, now we don't know what a reception is anymore. And I think that those two plays and have really started, you know, have really caused this to be a thing. And I think it could all be solved. If the ball touches the ground, it's not a catch. You know? I don't know. Inbounds or out of bounds. The ball touches the ground, no catch. Period, end of story. This way nobody can say anything. But, you know, here we are with this nonsense, and the Cowboys are still crying. So
If only it were that simple. I feel like if it were that simple, it would have been the case a long time ago. But I don't know. I don't work
well, it used
for
to be
the,
that way.
The powers that be.
It really used to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I played, you know, I played football in high school back in the 70s. It was that way. I mean, that ball touched the ground. That was it. And pros were that way too.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I don't know. Number five, Peyton Manning is too old to play football anymore. And, you know, I think he's starting to feel it. The receiving core is good. The line is good. The running game is good. And, you know, he started showing signs towards the end of the year that looked like it didn't look like he didn't want to play football, but it looked like he just couldn't, like, perform at the level that we've been used to seeing him perform. And it's been, you know, wildly dramatic drop-off. And, you know, I mean, you know, in the 2013 season, I think he started out with, like, I don't know, something like 7 touchdown passes in the first game or mm-hmm. something crazy.
Yep.
And then, you know, that season was unbelievable. He was running away the best player. He started out the next year, you know, started out 2014 pretty good, and then, you know, he was having up and down games, and then by the end of the season, it just was not happening. Is Peyton Manning too old for football?
I think Peyton Manning is too old to be continuously getting hit as much as he's been over the last couple of years. And, you know, he's been hit a good amount over his career. But since the neck surgery, we've seen that since he's come back from the neck surgery, his arm strength is not what it was. He had some weird right tricep atrophy going on for a long time there. But I think if he's going to wind up, I believe he's going back to play this year. But him playing with Gary Kubiak running that offense and running a very – I think that's going to be an offense that will be very good for Peyton Manning to emphasize the run game. And, you know, with the right protection schemes, it's going to keep him from getting hit as much as he's been if all goes according to plan. And he's still – I mean, you can keep him on his feet. Like, I still – and, you know, more so than he's been. He's still, I think, one of the best minds in the game. And in the right offense, which I think – a Gary Kubiak-led offense could be very beneficial for Peyton. I think that he could I think he could do well for himself next year.
Oh, I'm rooting for him. You know, who doesn't love Peyton Manning? You know, so it's just like,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just, I don't know, man. The mind is there. The talent is around him, and I just think it's just been, you know, too many, you know, just too much mileage. And. And, you know, maybe that next – I don't know anything about the surgery that he had, and I don't even want to make anything that even comes close to any, mm-hmm. you know, that would even sound like I know what I'm talking about vis-a-vis a medical claim. But, you know, who knows what happens when you operate on the neck and you're near the spinal column and, you know, mm-hmm. there's nerves and whatever and running down your right shoulder to your right – I have no idea what's going on. I just wish him the best, but he just – It looks like it's coming to the end real quick here, and you know I hope not for his sake, but you know I think that he might be it's just too many miles now, and he's just too old to play football at that level anymore. Number six is that Julian Edelman is a really good player. I always thought that Tom Brady was so great that he made the Wes Welker, he made the whoever. Whoever the receiver was. And I thought that Danny Amendola was going to be that guy had he been able to stay healthy and whatever. But it turns out that Julian Edelman, you know, just in that same mold of player, just comes out and he just is gangbusters. And, I mean, not only is he just a really good football player in general, like aware and stuff and can make tackles and break up passes and, you know, and block defenders who are trying to make a play on a ball and chase down guys who recovered a fumble, whatever – the guy is he's an excellent football player. And he's also an excellent fantasy asset. I mean, not a bad guy to have as your third receiver on your fantasy team. But that's something else we learned that, you know, this is it. Julian Edelman is definitely really good. This is, you know, 2.5 years in a row now at this level.
I do agree. And it's funny. My girlfriend and I were having this conversation actually earlier today about Julian Edelman and how good he is. And we're talking about how when Welker left the Patriots and, you know, people were saying Amendola was the biggest spot. She was on the Edelman bandwagon for a long time before he even got you know, to this level, like when he was first with the Patriots. And all he needed was, you know, the chance to play. And, you know, they might have signed Amendola, but Edelman was the one waiting in the wings for the opportunity, and he got it. And he, like you said, you know, the argument that, you know, we both came to is that he's just a natural, he's just a good football player. He's a converted quarterback, played quarterback at Kent State. And being drafted by a football coach like Bill Belichick, who knows how to use multi-purpose players like that, you saw a passing touchdown he had to Amendola in the playoffs, beautiful play. And he's just, he's also very fortunate to have been drafted to, or to have wound up with a team that's going to use him the way that the Patriots have, instead of a team that would have maybe tried to pigeonhole him into strictly a receiver or strictly a punt returner or strictly a quarterback. But he has proven with the Patriots that he is much more than that. He's a solid football player. And had Brady not thrown all those touchdowns in the Super Bowl, you can make an argument that Edelman could have been the MVP.
I thought he was. I really did. I thought that Julian Edelman played well enough to be the MVP of that game. I really did. And I'm, you know, he finished 22nd overall, non-PPR, of course. He finished 22nd overall in a standard scoring league. And he had, let me see, he had, he was targeted 134 times, which is, you know, which is a lot for a 5'10 guy who's 200 pounds soaking wet. You know, I mean, it's like, I know. And he winds up with 972 yards and 4 receiving touchdowns for the regular season, and he missed 2 games. And there was another game where he was hurt. I think it was against the Chicago. He got hurt the week before against the Jets. The Jets banged him up pretty hard, and then he only played for one play or something, or only had one target. One reception against the Chicago Bears. But they were just slapping the crap out of the Bears at the end. It didn't matter. But and he, you know, and then he finished out the season with, you know, a whole bunch of touchdowns. So I'm impressed with the guy. Plus he had 94 yards rushing, and plus he had 94 yards rushing, and he's a threat in the return game. So I'm on the Julian Edelman bandwagon like I'd never been.
Points for days.
I'm telling you, they just are so lucky. It's, and I know, and yes, it does have a lot to do with Tom Brady, and you know, they when they lost Wes Welker, I guess Wes was looking for $8-9 million. They let him go, brought in Danny Amendola for 6.5, and they had this kid, Julian Edelman, from, like you said, from Kent State, and then he just, you know, takes over the punt returning and some of the kick return duties and looks pretty good doing it, and then they give him a shot at receiver, and he doesn't let up. And if you remember the championship game from 2 years ago against the Denver Broncos, this Tom Brady has a decent passing game. I think he overthrew Edelman like 3 times wide open.
Yeah,
in the second half of that game, and he, you know, but yet every ball that was like on him, he caught. I love him. Another good Patriot player that they're not paying a lot of money to, who's contributing at a really high level. So so we learned that Julian Edelman is a really good player. Number 7,
yes.
And that Russell Wilson is a top 5 player in the league. What do you think?
Oh well, he was one play away from cementing in his legacy as, you know, one of the, you know, possibly the best young quarterback in the game. He throws that touchdown pass instead of an interception and beats Peyton Manning and Tom Brady in the Super Bowl back-to-back years, then forget it. But I think still, even regardless of all of that, he you saw what he did, you know, in the playoffs this year, and he just had just the most magical run, even against Green Bay, where the Seahawks were dead to rights so many times in that game. And yeah, how bad he played and how he was able to lead them to win, all things considered. But and the other thing that's kind of funny about Russ is in this era where you're seeing a lot of guys come into the league at the quarterback position, like the Cam Newtons and the RG3s, and make big impacts rushing. And RG3 after he got hurt, not the same on the ground anymore. Cam hasn't been running as much. Russ has been very consistent with his legs. And as a fantasy quarterback, as a reality quarterback, that's something that's very, very valuable. He doesn't look to scramble all the time, but he's got the requisite speed, he's got the requisite athletic ability to be able to really do damage and lead all quarterbacks in the league in rushing like he did this last year. And he's just a smart player, he's a good player, and that's a great team he's got around him. You know, it's a lot of questions regarding the Seahawks and how they're going to look next year. And that's really, I think, going to be a big test. I think Ruskin is up to the plate. He is up to the challenge, I should say.
Yeah, I'm telling you. You know, two of those interceptions against Green Bay were not his fault. I mean, they were right on the money. You know, I mean, one of them was like the guy should have just pulled out the front of his shirt and the ball would have fallen in. He would have caught it that way. It was such a good pass. Instead, he tried to catch it with his hands. It bounces up in the air. It's picked off. And the other play was out in front of the guy a little bit, but he still should have had it. And I'll lay the other two interceptions on him, and that's you know, fine, but whatever. But I think he's – if I'm drafting, I mean, you know, you're drafting right now for the future, and you want a young quarterback going forward, and you want somebody great to start your team with right now, I'm making the case that I'm, you know, maybe take him ahead of Andrew Luck. Can you imagine if he had that receiving core?
Mm-hmm.
You know, had T.Y. Hilton and Reggie White and like talent like that, Dante Moncrief, Dwayne Allen – He doesn't even have anybody as good as Kobe Fleener on his team to throw the ball to.
And if they draft a player, there's going to be like a requisite, like, you know, physical, you know, wide receiver, you know, lead wide receiver type. That is just going to make him much more dangerous. If they can draft a player that can be what Sidney Rice was supposed to be when he came over there, then forget it.
Exactly. But what does it say about Percy Harvin? I mean, here's a guy that they traded a first-round pick for and signed him to a long contract for enormous money. I think he counts 10. If the Jets keep him, he'll count like almost $11 million against the cap. If they keep him, they got to decide by in a month, I think. They have to make that call. And, you know, as talented as he is and as good a player as he is, they didn't want him. They were willing to, you know, to eat some of that contract. They were willing to take a fifth-round pick, which is a huge value differential for what they paid for him from Minnesota. And then, you know, then they just let him go. It's not like they couldn't have used him. So that's a topic for another podcast. Probably you could do a whole half hour just on that. But anyway, number eight, Eli Manning is really good even without an offensive line. And I know you're a Giant fan, so I'm going to let you riff on this. Is that what we learned, that he's really good even without an offensive line?
Well, you can make the argument that if that was the case, then Eli would have wound up leading the Giants in the playoffs. But you can also make the case that all of the injuries that the Giants suffered, and they've been suffering badly with injuries for years and years and years, and this year it just got taken to a whole new level. And he technically didn't have an offensive line, but he still, and I think the emergence of Odell Beckham was the saving grace, I think, for as far as, like, going forward for Eli, because early in the year, there was going to be a transition period of learning a completely new offense like the Giants were, and then you lose offensive linemen, you lose Victor Cruz, he may never be the same player again, you still don't know. Reuben Randle's not developing as expected, and then you find out that Odell Beckham, while putting up the greatest season, arguably, that a rookie receiver has ever had in the NFL, was doing it with two tears in his right hamstring, the hamstring that was giving him problems. The fact that the Giants were able to click near the end of the year offensively, even though they weren't able to translate it into wins, I think, you know, as far as the offense, you know, for fantasy production even, that's going to bode very well from going forward. Another year in the new system, they're going to be very comfortable. If Cruz is anywhere close to the same player that he was before the injury, and Randle can develop further, and Beckham can just continue to do what he does, then they can find a tight end who can be a little more consistent. And all that's going to remain is going to be keep the offensive line healthy or as healthy as you can, and see what Eli really can do. I mean, Eli threw for almost 5,000 yards a couple of years ago in the same situation.
It's his best year since then. So I mean, this is
absolutely,
you know, now
statistically anyway.
Yeah. You know, I think he's really good, man. I'm not that much of a Giant fan, but I am a Giant. I mean, I root for the Giants against everybody when they're not, you know, that's not playing when they're not playing the Jets. So I'm I consider myself a Giant fan to that regard, and I just happen to think he's really, really good. Okay. Number nine, that the Jets will always stink.
Well, is hiring an offensive coordinator that's been out of the NFL for 2 years does not help your cause as far as getting better. And I don't know how that's going to work with Geno Smith, or they're going to try to bring someone else in. Todd Bowles, as a head coach, I know we were talking about this last, I think it was the last time I was on the podcast. It's going to be very interesting to see what he does with this team. But right now, it's not the most optimistic looking of scenarios. But you never know. Crazy things that happen.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. But I think that this is old news, not necessarily something we learned this year. It's just something that's being reaffirmed this year. You know, the Jets are a bad football team. They've been for some time, and they will remain so until they prove that they're not. I think that's just basically where we're at with them. Number 10.
Not taking the right steps.
Dez Bryant. Number 10, Dez Bryant is, quote-unquote, one of those guys. I mean, when you talk about Andre Johnson, Calvin Johnson, you know, we talk about receivers at that level. Is he one of those? Is he one of those guys? Is this the year where he was just like clearly the best guy? And
I don't know if he was the best, but he didn't do anything to, you know, dispel the notion that he can be and probably will be one of those guys who's going to ascend to that next level. I mean, if they can get him a little bit more volume and he can continue producing at the rate that he did this past year, then you know, who knows what he can do statistically and how far he can lead the offense now, especially if they can continue to run the ball as well as they did this year.
I think the guy is as good as anybody I've seen play football. Like, seriously, that good. He's you know, you may not like his attitude necessarily, but, boy, can he's a remarkable wide receiver. And, you know, Tony Romo's pretty good. You know, they play in a half dome. The weather's usually pretty good when they're playing at home. They have at least 8 games there. And, you know, but they play in the NFC East, so they do get a lot of weather games. And it's, in a dynasty league, if I can't get Andrew Luck or Le'Veon Bell or something like that at 1 or 2, I think I could make the argument, you could make the argument that Dez would be as good a pick as any of those guys right now. And I think that he's running it. He is as unstoppable. One-on-one, it's impossible. And they're always constantly worried about him. And I think that when you're putting up performance, you know, putting up production like he's doing, this is 2 years in a row now, and he's just getting better, where it's just at the very, very top of wide receiver performance. And, you know, you'll get Antonio Brown, who's had 2 amazing years in a row. If he can keep that up, you know, perhaps he enters the conversation that he's a little bit better than Dez, and maybe Dez isn't, you know, one of those guys. But I think with that athleticism, his ability to leap and catch the ball, I think he's just dynamite. Number 11, John Elway couldn't stand his entire coaching staff.
Well, it's not so much the fact they couldn't stand them, but I think part of the fact is that John Elway, he just always struck me as an executive as one of those guys that doesn't want to have, you know, a risk of anybody, you know, like outshining him Fox, you know, I feel like Fox kind of walked away on his own accord more so than, but Elway, you know, Adam Gase is one of the hottest, you know, head coaching names as far as, you know, guys who are being looked at to fill vacancies for head coaching spots. And, you know, Elway, I'm sure, had no problem letting, Adam Gase go away because, you know, he kind of, you know, puts him in his place that's, you know, lesser known. He isn't going to have that, you know, chance to kind of, like, outshine him in a way. You know what I mean, kind of?
Well, here's what I'm thinking on it. I think that with the defense, as loaded as it is, when you take all those guys, you know, from Knighton to DeMarcus Ware to Von Miller to Chris Harris Jr. to Aqib Talib, T.J. Ward, Raheem Moore. I don't think the defense lived up to its capability, and I think they could have done a lot better. And they were pretty healthy most of the season. And, you know, whether it's Peyton Manning's, you know, mileage that's causing the passing game to decline a little bit, I don't know if Elway is worried about nothing. He is an ego guy, but I don't think it was really that. I think it was just that he was just, if it's Super Bowl or bust with them right now, and I think that he has just reached the point where he's had it. And I it didn't surprise me at all that he let everybody go. Number 12, the Niners are going to miss Jim Harbaugh.
I think they may miss him, but, you know, going to Tom Sula, they're not going to miss too much in the realm of continuity between members of the coaching staff members. Not like they're bringing in somebody totally new. And Harbaugh was the cancer to the locker room that it was reported that he was, then it's going to be all good. That's just, you know, all good, but better than it would be, I guess. They don't lose much in the way of continuity, which is a good thing for this team.
I agree with that. And we've reached pretty much the end here, so why don't you just go ahead and tell us what you got coming up with the Whale articles, and we'll catch up next week.
Absolutely. I am continuing my new weekly series, Beats by Ray. I really don't have anything as far as an idea of what I'm going to write about this week, but hey, most of my ideas for the pieces come later in the week anyway, so we'll all find that together. If you want to check out my stuff, I have written about a number of players and concepts I think we'll find very interesting, a little bit different takes.
Excellent. I can't wait to read it. You have yourself a great evening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Be well,
absolutely.
Ray.
Absolutely. All right. You too.
Bye, man.